This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Comics proudly presents DC Post-Crisis Management, a monthly miniseries exploring DC Comics crisis events from 1986 through today. Universes will die, continuities will reboot, minds will be bent, and eyes will cross. The end is only the beginning. Is the end. Or some such nonsense.
It is good to be back home. That was a long and very trying trip all the way back here. And Stephen Ferrari tried to warn me as I left, as I was leaving Queens, that there was a new crisis that was happening. And I picked it up. I was thinking, hey, this should be fun. This should be, you know, it's the Rebirth era. DC Universe Rebirth gave us so much hope and promise. Such a great new start for DC Comics. So I jump into this whole line. It was great. I was like, wow, I'm really like full of hope and happiness again. I mean, despite the fact that, you know, yeah, we brought Wally West back. That's cool. And unfortunately, you know, his wife and family are nowhere to be found, and he's being told by anyone and everyone who can like get his attention that he's the great source of hope in DC. And I mean, there's no way that could cause you any kind of like anxiety or trauma, you know, knowing that your kids are lost somewhere in a Speed Force and your at one time wife doesn't know who the hell you are. But I digress. You know, that's neither here nor there. But along comes this book from Tom King and Clay Mann. I like both of these guys. They're awesome. I pick up Heroes in Crisis, and I read that on the way home. And I gotta tell you, I ain't feeling too hopeful about DC right now. I'm feeling kind of burned, kind of real bummed out here. And you know, I think I need to just lay down on this couch right now, and I'm gonna wait for. I got a message here from Todd, said he was gonna be here any minute now, so I'm gonna lay here and try to collect myself, and maybe he'll be here in a few minutes. Oh God, it's yeah, that's better.
Russell Sellers.
I'm awake.
Russell Sellers.
I'm awake.
You have been selected. Welcome to the Place to Be Nation Comics Sanctuary.
Oh God. What has had this a disembodied voice that sounds kind of like Todd's boom voice? What's happening right now?
Well, as you know, comics can be very traumatic, particularly 9-issue miniseries that leave one confused and spun. So as part of a systematic effort to treat psychological damage suffered on the pages of Heroes in Crisis, I have established this sanctuary in your home to talk about things. This is a safe space. I have the compassion of Wonder Woman, the honor of Superman, and the will of Batman ready to listen to you.
All right, let's... Todd, I can see you.
Oh, sorry. I better take off this stupid mask then.
Yep. Todd, I can see you standing there behind the curtain, like, talking to the mic. And it's a nice speaker setup. I would think that, you know, the purveyor of Place to Be Nation pop, and of course a well-experienced sound technician such as yourself would be able to set up this nice little thing, but I can totally see you behind the curtain.
Well... The friends of mine at the Montgomery Guitar Center helped me out. but here I am, and my gig is up. But yes, I'm here specifically because we need to talk about this series, Heroes in Crisis. When last we spoke, it was about the wonderful, legendary Crisis on Infinite Earths at the beginning of your journey. And now that you've been through so many crises, culminating with perhaps the most bleak and depressing one of all, I'm still in Sanctuary voice. Since you've been through so many of these things, I thought it would be a good idea to just relax, have a beer, talk through it, maybe examine what's really going on with Heroes in Crisis, because a lot of people were upset about this thing, man. It did not necessarily meet a lot of our expectations, but perhaps it wasn't meant to. Perhaps there was a purpose written by Tom King specifically that was above our heads, and it's going to take some time for us to really sift through and figure out.
It's possible, sure. Lots of possibilities are still coming out of this, and of course, Tom King is a guy that, you know, he can be divisive. He can be really great. I mean, he's won Eisner Awards. He's written some really great stuff, like Sheriff of Babylon, his Vision series over at Marvel. Mr. Miracle was great.
Yeah.
I had a chance to read that on the way back here. All of that stuff was really awesome, and I personally think that his Batman run has been real good. But this Heroes in Crisis was something that I don't think I was emotionally prepared for.
Yeah, me either. There were some, I don't want to say sacred cows, but there were some beloved characters who went through the ringer here. And that's, again, kind of the point of Sanctuary, is where do the heroes go when they've had this PTSD? Let's set this thing up. We, you know, the Trinity, maybe setting this place up so people could work through their things. And this comes from a very personal point of view of Tom King, who suffered PTSD. He was overseas with the CIA and had very intense experiences with that. So, you know, he projected that, or he kind of a continuation of some of the themes in Vision and some of the themes in Mr. Miracle, some of the themes in Sheriff of Babylon. But I don't know. I mean, we compare this story to some of the other big crises. It definitely feels smaller in a way. You know, it's talking about the murders of a small handful of people instead of galaxies. But it's still definitely something we're going to go through and talk about a lot. And you know, there may be some hidden depth here that because I got to be honest, I walked away from issue 9 saying, well, they didn't do the thing I wanted them to do, walk the whole thing back and say that this was just like a potential thing. They left the consequences pretty much, other than Wally dying or Wally. I guess they've left it in a point where Wally knows he screwed up and needs to make amends, instead of what happened, which was, we were all led to believe, was the Wally had framed all these people, or had framed Booster and Harley and made it look like, I guess Wally uploaded the info to the Daily Planet and all the stuff. He kind of exposed Sanctuary as well as part of his cover up. We should probably talk about the plot before we get into the specifics.
Yeah, sure.
The last issue.
As you had already mentioned, a place called Sanctuary that was set up somewhere in the Midwest. And it honestly looks a lot like the Kent Farm from the outside, because it's meant to be a place that hides in plain sight. But the whole purpose of it is to have kind of a mental health facility for superheroes, for people who are like superpowered and have been through really traumatic events, which is to say that's pretty much all of them. Like every superhero, every vigilante who works on, you know, basically on the side of good, has been through some kind of like horrible, violent episode, or just like they all deal with mental health issues that aren't necessarily seen on the surface, because these are the kinds of people who can't just advertise out there that they have mental health issues, and for, you know, for varying reasons. And this place allows them to keep their secret identities, because they all dress in like white robes and a golden mask to hide their identities. And instead of speaking with with like a trained clinical psychologist. They're speaking with an AI program that creates very lifelike, almost like Star Trek, the Next Generation holodeck type scenarios for them to to work through their issues, to work through their traumas. And it's been programmed by Wonder Woman, Superman, and Batman using Kryptonian technology and also using like Wayne Tech and some of the Themyscira magic, I believe, to create this new thing that is meant to help all of these heroes. And they all have what I think is maybe like the strongest aspect of the story. They have confessional tapes. It's done in a 9-panel grid where you see the confessional tapes of these varying people, and some of them are incredibly deep and like very well thought out. I am particularly loved Superman and Batman's confessions. I thought they were very pointed. And then, of course, we get a longer form one from Wally West himself throughout the story. That's both done in that style in the 9-panel grid and in his internal monologue.
Yeah,
as he's thinking these things
a lot more towards the end too, because he's dead for a few issues.
Yeah, we should say that an incident happens right in issue one, or before the action begins. It happens off panel in issue one, where it looks like a mass like shooting or something has happened at Sanctuary, because a lot of heroes are dead, and it's a long list of heroes. Most of them like C and D listers, maybe even like lower than that, people that you probably haven't heard of.
Lagoon Boy.
Lagoon Boy, Commander Steel, Hotspot.
Blue Jay.
Blue Jay, Solstice, Protector, Nemesis, even the Tattooed Man was apparently among them. Like, these are all characters that you've just like probably not really paid any attention to or even heard of.
Expendable characters for the most part.
Very much so. Then you get the big name characters that die in issue one. There are three big name characters that die: Roy Harper, Poison Ivy, and Wally West.
Yep.
Only one of those is going to stick by the end of the story, and that's Roy Harper, because they actually do have a big funeral for him over in Green Arrow, which was a really great issue, very touching stuff. And his death is also brought up, like plays a big part in Red Hood Outlaw, when Batman goes to find Jason Todd and tell him what happened to Roy.
That's when they were part of a team for a long time, right? Red Hood and the Outlaws.
They were real close. And that moment when Bruce tells Jason what happened is a real heartbreaker. And of course, when Iris West, who's Wally's aunt, finds out what happened, she goes ballistic and tries to like physically hurt Batman. And that's and she's, you know, understandably, she has like really lost it on him, because the only reason Wally was there was because of the events of Flash War, when he was emotionally broken from not being able to find his kids inside the Speed Force.
Right. Post-rebirth, Wally's family has just kind of vanished. Actually, post-52, New 52. The old pre-New 52 continuity. He had grown up, had his married Linda Park, had a family, you know, had just kind of been, even though the kids were very polarizing to comics fandom, it was very nice, and we did a whole podcast about this, that you had a character who was allowed to grow, mature, gain mastery over his abilities, and come into his own as a legacy character in the absence of Barry Allen the Flash, and get, you know, be allowed to get married, have a family, and then it was all wiped out by New 52.
Yeah, that's it sucked that all that happened to him. And then Sanctuary is actually something that's been mentioned all along since Rebirth started. Particularly in Tom King driven books. Like, it's been mentioned a couple times in Batman and then it started to kind of bleed over into Flash after they did a crossover called The Button. And they actually did another crossover during this story called The Price, where Batman and the Flash are working together to try and uncover the mystery of who actually killed all these people at Sanctuary. Like, they're on the hunt for a killer. And Batman actually deduces at one point that what happened here actually had a similar signature or energy signature to what happened in the Batcave whenever the smiley face button first appeared.
So we're talking about universes crossing over, or, you know, warping into each other, characters crossing over from continuities. So it begins to see, you start to see why they waited until maybe the conclusion of this story to have Doomsday Clock come, number 10, come out, where they're starting to set up a bigger picture for the DC universe. But within the pages of this book, there's some awfully troubling stuff. Wally,
I would agree.
Wally, as a result of all the, if we can kind of keep summarizing, as a result of all the trauma from coming back and having being basically the only one who remembers everything, he's basically psychopirate post crisis, you know, who was crazy and institutionalized. Only Wally had all these things that he had actually lost. Psychopirate just, you know, was overwhelmed with being able to remember everything and how crazy it was. Wally went through and has this tremendous guilt because he survived, and yet everybody he loved doesn't remember him for the most part. Barry kind of remembers him, and over the course of the Flash post-rebirth, Iris eventually remembers him, yes?
Yes, Iris gets her memories of him back in the pages of Flash. Actually, during Flash War is whenever she gets all of her memories of him restored. In the pages of Titans, when Wally would touch certain people who were close to him, their memories of him would come back. So
For the first couple of years, that Titans book, Rebirth Titans book, was very good.
It was. I enjoyed it a lot, but it. I mean, it fell off after a while, but it was mostly because it just felt like it was spinning its wheels. Yeah. Like they just had no idea what to do next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as though the powers that be at DC didn't necessarily have a plan. You know, just saying, okay, let's have fun, write these characters with this new situation we've got, and then what?
Yeah, it's like the powers that be over at DC, it's like they formulated a plan for those characters for about a year. Or a year and a half to 2 years, maybe. And it was pretty clear after that that they shifted their focus back to their top-selling book, which was Batman.
Yep.
And Detective Comics. Like they pushed that hard. That was where they concentrated on because it was the one making the money. And I would say to a lesser extent, they also had plans, you know, in place for books like Superman Action and Action right. Comics and Wonder Woman. Like, they had that. But for characters, like your legacy characters, like Nightwing, like Wally West, and pretty much all the other members of the Titans, they were kind of just left out there to their own devices to see what would happen. But there was no larger narrative for them. And now it seems like with this story, there is a larger narrative in place. I'm not 100% on it. And some of the stuff that Tom King said kind of makes me wonder, was it really him that did this, or was it someone else? It kind of feels like, because he said himself that he came with the plot idea, and he was told which characters to use in it.
Right. That means the story's already kind of compromised to serve the larger purpose of whatever the powers that be at DC, Harris and DiDio, if we can say that, right? Bob Harris, Dan DiDio, those are the two main guys. What they're trying to shape this universe towards. This push to 1,000 issues, which was absolutely a tremendous accomplishment in Superman and Detective, that kind of got all the energy from the company, it felt like to me. Promotionally and editorially. And so we've had some of the other books, or you know, in other, the case of Placating Superstars, too, bringing on in Grant Morrison to write Green Lantern, which I'm putting off. I will eventually read it. G. Willow Wilson on Wonder Woman also, you know, Aquaman, too. You know, we're bringing higher profile creators on these books. But what's the direction of the universe?
Yeah, it's really hard to say because now, and of course, now we know that Tom King has been taken off Batman, though he's going to get to continue his story next year in the Batman Catwoman book. So not done yet. And he's going to have that book with his Heroes in Crisis cohort, Clay Mann. So it's going to be a very pretty book, if nothing else.
Yes.
And then you've got, you know, the question mark of, well, who's going to write Batman? We don't know. And Brian Bendis, of course, is handling the Superman books and doing a tremendous job of it.
Yeah, and gearing towards this Leviathan event. But Brian Bendis is also involved in his own imprint of comics, Young Justice with Naomi, also an excellent book you and I are reading, and
love that book.
Wonder Twins by Mark Russell, this, and Dial H by Sam Humphries. It's, you know, a separate Young Readers imprint, but still takes place within DC continuity. I wonder, Bendis is already doing so much. Will he be on Batman too? I don't know.
It's all very hard to say, but getting back on Heroes in Crisis, like seeing how it all wound up, I had a long ride back here, Todd, and I had a long time to just really digest this one. And there are things I really loved about it. Like, it definitely cuts to the heart of things. It's not a book that's very lighthearted at any point. And it feels like this book is doing something very uncomfortable with our superheroes. And that's that it's showing us their traumas kind of laid bare. Like, we always think of them as people who are like so mentally strong and able to overcome a lot of things. But sometimes it gets to be too much even for them. And I actually really appreciate this book for calling that out, for saying that, you know, just because someone you know appears mentally strong and capable of handling anything that's thrown at them doesn't necessarily mean that they are, and that they need help sometimes too.
And you know, and it's the big stigma of maybe not our times, but over the last few years, we are bringing awareness to mental health issues, depression, suicidal ideations, bipolar disorder, anxiety. And, you know, we're seeing that it affects heroes too, and people who put themselves on the line. And it certainly makes sense in that sense of the word, but is that why people read comics? Do we want to relate to these characters for their problems, or do we want to get away, escape the real world and see people who are better than us and aspire to be them? And I guess you could see, okay, this character is treating their mental illness and talking about it and overcoming it, and that can be inspirational, but I didn't see a lot of that in this series.
To answer your initial question, yes. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. Yeah. I think that it's that it can be both. That we want to see our heroes put through real trials. And I mean, there's only so many times that you can have, you know, Batman fighting any one of his physically challenging rogues. And only so many times that like the Flash can also take down like Reverse Flash in the same manner. Like we've seen that. We've seen them taking on the physical threats. We've seen them taking on like big mysteries, like Batman's a great detective, so is Flash. We've seen, you know, Superman facing down gigantic cosmic threats, you know, like even in Brian Bendis's current run, he faced off against Rogel Czar in his a new like physically imposing character in his Man of Steel miniseries. But I think the next great challenge for these characters, especially to give them a challenge that's very present in the real world and present for a lot of people, is this is mental health. is the traumas that they go through whenever they are confronted with such violent acts. And it's something that Tom King might not have presented it as eloquently as a certain other work presented it, or in such a way that was as challenging as another work presented it. But I see a few parallels here with Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons' Watchmen.
I was going to bring that up too. We read Watchmen for just the brilliance and the layering of the story, the complexity of the characters, the amazing plot, the details that you catch new things every time. So that's an example of a comic you don't necessarily read to aspire to be into, but no. The craft of it is supreme and it's inscrutable. This we can pick apart a bit, I think.
Yeah, this is, like I said, this is not presented in such an eloquent manner. It's also presented in a more compressed style storytelling than what Watchmen is. Watchmen is this like sprawling epic of a story that really digs down into the nuance of a lot of characters. But I also think that the use of the 9-panel grid in Heroes in Crisis was on purpose.
Yeah, I mean, like, we see it in other books too. We see it in Justice League. We see it in Legion of Superheroes. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it back in Fantastic Four, as you know, in Marvel Age.
Oh, sure.
Specific, though. It definitely evokes that, especially, character in the same pose thing going on, panel to panel.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was absolutely meant for that. I think it was meant to set the minds of people to that aspect of Watchmen, something that Rorschach himself even says in the story, that he wonders to himself why there are so few superhero or like vigilantes, honestly, left active and without personality disorders. And it's like, well, you're all trapped in this like just awful cycle of violence. That's
The thing is about Watchmen, everybody had a different disorder going on.
Yes.
So
everybody was dealing with some kind of trauma, and it affected their mental state. And I think that's an admirable thing that Tom King tried to do here, to explore that, to call it out, make it real, and to put that out there for people that may be going through it themselves, and him basically saying, hey, you're not alone.
Yeah.
Your favorite heroes go through these same things too, and sometimes they need help. Now, of course, the events of this are poignant, and yet it's delivered in such a way that I think is almost too hard of a shock to the system for a lot of people to deal with. Not that you couldn't build up to this kind of thing happening, but maybe this story needed a little more room to breathe.
I think there's a lot of things going on. If we had been treated to maybe a mini crisis or something that we got to see Sanctuary in action, maybe in the pages of something like, we shouldn't say Metal, because that was the last, to me, big event before this. But yeah. It didn't feel to me, and of course, I'm a bad example because I'm typically behind on anything DC other than event books that I know I'll have time to keep be current on, or I'm current on stuff like Young Justice and Naomi. But if we had had maybe a little bit more of an initiation to how Sanctuary worked, if they didn't have to spend so much of the story talking about that and maybe dealing more with the plot details of this mystery, because it felt kind of messy at first. Nobody exactly knew what was going on. Harley Quinn was duped into thinking that Booster had done it, and vice versa. Booster thought that Harley had done it, and that ends up in the second to last issue being revealed to us that Wally West had set that whole thing up, trying to cover up when he freaked out and killed everybody.
Yeah,
so, that's,
Big shock, I think, that people weren't necessarily prepared for was that they couldn't imagine Wally West, of all characters, Wally West doing something like this.
Yeah, and framing other people for it.
And yeah, that's the part that gets head scratching. Not that he would necessarily lose control of the Speed Force and like accidentally kill a whole bunch of people. And that's what it is. That should be emphasized very heavily. This was not a murder. This was not like a mass murder incident. There was no premeditation to it. There was also no like just crime of passion at all. It was Wally truly believed that Sanctuary was created specifically for him because of what he had been through, and because nobody else was suffering like him. In his mind, he believed fully that nobody else was suffering like him, and that he was probably the only actual person inside Sanctuary at all.
So
he's going through the motions of it all, but then he decides that he's going to use his own like super speed and hack into the Sanctuary files to find out what all it had collected on him, what all it was assessing of him. But he stumbles upon everyone else's files and discovers that he's not there alone, that in fact every single hero that he's ever known or even heard of has been in Sanctuary at some point or another. And all finding out that they're all so like traumatized, or that they're all dealing with so much like heavy weight and just emotional issues, becomes too much for him and so overwhelming, and it breaks his control over the Speed Force. And as if you're a big Wally fan, you know that Wally is faster than Barry because his connection to the Speed Force is stronger, and because of his emotional state and the Speed Force requiring a pretty like steady emotional like level of control in order to keep it contained, Wally kind of starts to lose it and runs outside to keep him to have his emotional outburst. But when he starts to lose control and the blue lightning is going everywhere, it sets off all the alarms inside Sanctuary, and the AI is telling everybody to evacuate the facility. So they're all walking outside, and for the first time, everyone's being revealed to each other, and there's Wally sitting on the ground. As these people walk towards him, he has this the lightning unleashes from him, killing everyone around him. So pure accident. He had no control over what happened. It was involuntary manslaughter at best, or at most, I think, if you're going to wind up charging the guy with anything. But his reaction, I think, is what really shocked people, because there were a couple of people who did not walk outside. It was Booster Gold and Harley Quinn, who were both inside Sanctuary's
simulators.
Poison Ivy had actually locked Harley inside that, because Harley wasn't supposed to be inside Sanctuary at all.
She was visiting Ivy.
And since she's still classified as a supervillain, I guess she was not meant to be there, unless like specially directed, as Poison Ivy had been. Booster Gold was just in the middle of a program and didn't walk out. So Wally, like, formula is thinking at super speed, I guess, and starts like formulating a plan to try and make up for the things that he did, but he needed to buy himself time to do it. So he disguises himself, or he comes up with this weird identity, calling himself the Puddler, which is a reference to something else, like in history.
Ironworkers, or I can't remember. It's like some kind of people that talk to the media or something yeah. like that. You know, it's Lois Lane talks about that.
Yeah, Lois actually does give the explanation for that in story. Yeah. And Wally compiles all the sanctuary data that he had seen and sends it en masse to Lois Lane to out the existence of sanctuary in the first place. And honestly, I felt like that part was handled pretty well.
Yeah.
With Superman making the decision that, you know, since he knows Lois has this, and she's going to go public with it because she kind of has to, Superman decides to use that information and go public with Sanctuary himself and
right.
tell everybody, here's what's been happening, here's what's going on. And that was part of Wally's plan. The other part was to
clone,
I guess, to
not
bring,
clone himself, bring a time remnant or a anomaly.
Yeah, he ages like he can go forward in time. I think he's using Booster Gold's like time travel apparatus. Because his I actually really appreciated his thought process on this, that he would set all of this up and it would take time for it to work, but in order for him to not get caught, he had to appear dead himself.
Right. And
so the way he did that was he would go forward in time like 5 or 6 days or 5 days and kill his older self who was also in on this. And it would create a kind of a permanent time loop where he's trapped. Like Wally will be permanently trapped inside the time loop as a means of sacrificing himself for the horrible things that he did. But in his mind, he would have been helping everyone by exposing Sanctuary and by also sending his confessional tape to Lois Lane, which right. is something else he did.
Yeah, he did. The issue was framed with that, with Wally's confession as though Lois was reading it. So some of the most heartbreaking stuff are the Wally and Wally scenes where he's explaining things to his other self and trying to kill him or failing to kill him because it ends up, you know, that part has changed. And then he sets, at the end of 9, he sets that Wally off to fix things, I guess, and then turns himself in.
Yeah, the ending is... It can be a little confusing, but because of the way it's framed, because they do kind of like rush it all out the door.
Yeah.
But Booster and Harley, after having like fought each other and then wound up getting help from Batgirl and Blue Beetle, they kind of piece together all this stuff and kind of figure out what's happened, because they're the ones that discovered that Wally West's body from Sanctuary was actually 5 days older than right. it should be.
Batman figured that out, right? Or was it Flash?
It was Blue Beetle.
Blue Beetle. One.
It was Beetle and Booster. Booster Gold kind of figures this out, if I'm remembering right. Okay. That the body is not what it's supposed to be. So they, after piecing all of this together, go back to Sanctuary, where they find young and old Wally standing there together with the younger version about to kill his older self.
Yeah.
And they put a stop to that and convince him that, you know, you don't have to keep doing this. It's like you're putting yourself in a loop that is only ever going to, like, you know, just cause you and everyone else more suffering. Like you're making it worse by not just owning up to this, by like facing the real consequences for the things that have happened.
Yeah.
And
Booster's explanation of the loop, it's like it fixes Wally. I don't know. Cause the Wally we get talking through things and why he's done this. He knows he screwed up and he's just trying to minimize it and help people. And it feels like he's gotten back at this point in the story. It's I recognize the character a little bit more now.
Yeah, he's realized that Booster was right, and that Booster is actually kind of, and I think this is another aspect of this story that will probably be touched on in later stories. But Booster mentioned some things that we haven't actually seen yet, like Skeets giving him something for his birthday, and it causing a real like screw up in the timeline. So he keeps going back to try and fix it. I think that Booster has been traumatized in a way that we don't fully understand yet, which would also explain some of the stuff that happened with him and Batman over in that title.
Yeah, and that also written by Tom King.
Yep, I think that there is a much bigger story going on with Booster Gold than has been revealed yet. But he does make he comes up with a good plan to close the time loop. And I actually really appreciated why they didn't have Wally go backwards in time and prevent all the deaths.
Yeah.
When he says that he didn't go back in time because that's what caused Flashpoint and that's what caused him to disappear in the first place.
So there's actual consequences to Flashpoint, or at least, you know, the memory of that. That was well told, because Flashpoint jacked up a lot of stuff.
It did.
New 52 was great at the time, you know. It was easy to follow everything, and wow, a new continuity. But if they were going to bring the characters back, there had to be consequences. And this is at least a nice follow through. That, okay, yeah, he doesn't want to do that because that could mess up somebody else's life. Like, his life was messed up by Flash going back and killing Zoom.
He just didn't want to be Barry. And he didn't want to make the same mistake Barry did after making this horrible mistake. So it was like, man, it's hard for him to deal with. And it can be hard, I think, for the audience to really deal with, because we like Wally being that, happy, like hopeful character. Mm-hmm. But since he's come back in Rebirth, and I don't know whose shortcoming or whose failing this was, but yeah, they only brought Wally back partially. They brought him back and they left all of his memories from the old continuity in place. But all those pieces of him are still missing. So
we could speculate about that. I mean, Wally's caretaker is busy doing TV and movie and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, this guardian to make sure that the character is taken care of. Whereas the corporate suits, they're worried about the big three and the movies and everything. We can see that Geoff Johns is the guy that's kind of shepherded Wally through this, and we were so excited about Rebirth and, you know, and hopeful and optimistic, but something's happened. It's like DC is a mess, and hopefully this bigger picture you're hinting at that you think is happening, and I hope is happening. I hope Geoff is involved with that. I mean, he can't be the only one. I know Snyder seems to be doing his own thing with Justice League, and then his Black Label stuff and the Batman Who Laughs, the Fallout of Metal. I don't know. I have lost a lot of faith in DC over the years, and I'm kind of worried. man.
There's a larger picture that, because I'm reading all the Justice League titles. I'm reading, of course, I was reading Heroes in Crisis, still reading Doomsday Clock, Flash, Batman, the Bendis Superman stuff, both action and Superman. And the Year of the Villain stuff that's coming up is a connective thread that runs through all of this. Lex Luthor is the through line through that part of it. And of course the Justice League titles are going to be crossing over with each other. That's kind of a given. But then I look over at other titles, Flash as well. Flash is another big one that people really need to pay attention to there. So you've got all these things seemingly separate from each other, but they all do have this one through line that is connecting all of them. And I think that much like when Identity Crisis happened, it was not well received. It was,
but I loved it. It was a thing that it was. It felt like it was written not necessarily for me, but I just think the scope of it and the very close continuity to the past Justice League story. I understand there were people that didn't like it. It hit me hard. I loved it.
Yeah, when I read it at the time, it hit me that way too. But I also heard from a lot of people who were very angry about that story, and still are to this day.
Yeah.
And when I look at Heroes in Crisis, I'm thinking this is very similar.
Right. The character acting out of character.
Yeah. Like this. This has a lot of similar trappings. And then I'm looking over at what's happening in Justice League, which is acting as a continuity driver, honestly.
I'm 12 right issues behind on Justice League.
Snyder's Justice League was one that I was having a little trouble with at first, but with this most recent story arc, it really feels like it has coalesced. It has gelled. And I'm starting to see his bigger picture now. And I'm like, oh, now I get what you're doing. And it all feels like this is all tying together. This is all looping like right around each other. And it makes sense. It makes sense because Brian Bendis and Scott Snyder started working together very closely as soon as they were like both kind of given a bit of a promotion within DC to kind of help drive their continuities forward. You add into that James Tynion and Josh Williamson, who's over on Flash, and Kelly Sue DeConnick, who's on Aquaman.
Yeah.
And there's I still firmly believe that Geoff Johns is very much in on this conversation, and that Doomsday Clock is going to wind up meaning a lot more than people are afraid it's not going to right now.
So the delays on Doomsday Clock have maybe messed things up a little bit.
I think that's
books like this, right?
I think that's very possible. I think that the delays in Doomsday Clock are actually the reason that you're seeing a lot of these things happening in other books. I think that because it slowed down, they had to buy time. They had to figure out a way to create a narrative that would help to like maybe flesh out things a little bit more and even get us like closer to that world that you see in Doomsday Clock. But it's a delicate balancing act still, and they're not necessarily balancing it all in the best possible way, so it all looks very confusing and seems a little more chaotic than it probably is. But I do think that there have been issues. There have certainly been some problems, but I think that they're being exaggerated a little bit more than they actually are.
Well, it's nothing they can't, you know, just course correct with a good unifying story. Where the heroes act like the characters we want or, you know, have historically known and loved with good, solid art that's not marred by production delays. You know, and a lot of people say that the Bendis stuff is a good start. So, you know, you start reading from Action 1001 and the new Superman or even Bendis' Man of Steel. You take it from there and kind of go from there with the story looking for the big picture. But I'm not convinced that they can't spin out of it. I know that in a few months where they're going to go back to single shipping many of these books. We're going to have a line reduction of DC books from, well, I don't know if they're anywhere near 52, but they're going to cancel a lot of books and streamline things to once a month, probably going to have a price jump. But if that means a tighter continuity with more consistent creative teams, I think I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I think that it's time to do that. I think that they need to right-size the line. There doesn't need to be like twice monthly books. I think a lot of these stories need to be a little more compressed, because the decompressed nature of some of the double ship books isn't really working all that well. Like, for instance, I think Tom King's Batman actually could benefit from some compression. His more recent, like the Nightmares arc.
Yeah, they just kept this dream going forever. But in his defense, he was given this rope. You know, he was said, this is when you're going to, and we're kind of regurgitating the Hard Traveling Fanboys argument from their latest episode. But, you know, if you're going to yank the rug out from under him, he's got now 20 issues left, or 23 issues less to finish the story, or at least 13, because the Catwoman book is going to be 10, right?
So, or is it 12? Assuming, I think it'll probably be a year-long title. I think that Batman Catwoman is just there to allow him to tell his story. But given how everybody in the Bat office feels about his Bat book, I really think that Batman Catwoman, much like Batman and Robin for Grant Morrison, is going to be the book like you could, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to wind up being the continuity driver. It's going to wind up being kind of a main book, just like Batman and Robin was the main Bat book whenever it launched. And Batman was given to Tony Daniel, and that book was just kind of there if they wanted it. Like it didn't really do much, honestly, for the character.
Detective or Batman?
Batman.
Oh, that's right. That was New 52.
When New 52 came around, of course, it was back to the standard two, Batman and Detective.
And Snyder got to kind of get in, really do his thing with it. And Detective was kind of the place to try out new writers and feature the bigger Bat universe. But I think Batman has typically been the least of DC's problems, but now they have something that's a little maybe going on a little long for people's comfort. And, I don't know what it is. I mean, I've really liked this story when I've checked into it. I've been kind of putting it off. I haven't really read anything since maybe 52, 53, the Jury Duty issues. And God knows.
Yeah, those were good.
Yeah, Lee Weeks, who also did some fill-in art on Heroes in Crisis because Clayman couldn't necessarily fit deadlines, or they extended the series to being a 9 issue instead of however long it initially was solicited for. But I just wish that I don't know. I feel like the flagship Batman title is always going to be the dream book, the dream assignment for people, and the responsibility. Mm-hmm. So
I think the next writer, like, who's going to come on at probably issue 86, is probably just going to get they're actually going to wind up with a pretty substantial run, because I think they're going to go to issue from issue 86 to issue 99.
Yeah.
And
then bring in the A-lister.
Yep. I think that you get this. Now, I hesitate to call that a fill-in arc, because that's that's a lot of issues.
But you bring in a pro like Tomasi, for instance. You know, I mean, he a guy that's proven to write good Batman stories, good DC Universe stories. I mean, there are other guys out there. I kind of think of the Dan Jurgens of the world, or, you know, I think somebody who's earned it is somebody like Tom Taylor, who I would love to watch him on a mainstream DC book and see what he can do with a finite run. But I think at 100, you're going to get a big shift in the DC Batman line.
I think that's absolutely true. And, I mean, we still got a ways to go, but a long little while to go before issue 100 comes around.
Yeah.
Which I hope will be enough time for the A-lister, I think, is going to be taking over the book to finish up the story that he's currently telling. Because
in Marvel on Avengers and Thor, you mean?
but I don't think it's him.
Oh, okay. You don't think it's Jason Aaron? Okay.
I do not. I think it's Brian Michael Bendis.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. That almost seems too obvious, though, right? But it would fix a lot of stuff.
It does seem a little too obvious, but at the same time, I feel like in that amount of time, if Brian Bendis does actually have an ending for his Superman story figured out, and he intends to tell it in that many issues, then great, do that. But if that's not the case, if his Superman story is meant to be longer than that, I don't want him. I don't want him to leave. I want him to tell,
preserve that.
His, stay on. stay on that. Stay on Young Justice. Like, stay with your books, and tell your story in the most complete possible way that you can, and don't take on another gigantic assignment while you're working on already like two or three big assignments already, two of which are already gigantic. So let's not, you know, don't put too much on your plate. So I wouldn't want him to do that. Now, if my God, if Jason Aaron could come over from Marvel, like if his contract expires, he's done with Thor, he wraps up his Avengers stuff, and DC is able to lure him over to do Batman, even better, Batman with, say, Esad Ribic on art.
Oh, that would be beautiful. Wow. That'd be great.
Like put the team back together. I may have to forego my whole giving up all paper comics so I can collect that run. Or I may just go digital with it. You know, you never know. It'll still be pretty either way. But that's just some hypotheticals.
We're kind of like dreaming. We're spitballing here a bit. But
we're dreamcasting. But the when it comes to Tom King, though, he's still a DC exclusive writer, and this guy is an Eisner Award winner, including Eisner Award winning for his Batman run. He is a strong A-list writer, somebody who does really great work that, while I think this is true of every writer, is not for everyone. And Heroes in Crisis turned out to not really be for everyone.
Right. So what if this was about a different character? I mean, if it was about anybody but Wally, would things be different? You know, if this was John Stewart, who they already did this similar thing with in Cosmic Odyssey 30 years ago. But he didn't try to cover it up. You know, what if this was somebody like that, or Jessica Cruz, or somebody like that?
What if it had been all these same characters, but the roles were reversed, and it was Booster Gold who accidentally killed everybody?
Right.
I think this would not have been as controversial.
Yep.
I think it would have been more well received. I think a lot of the negative reaction to it has entirely to do with who the quote-unquote guilty party is.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of it is really based in a visceral reaction to that, more so than the quality and content of the story.
And, you know, I'll be speaking for Ben Morse here, who he and I are of one mind on this, on one thing. One thing in the world Ben and I agree on totally is Wally West. This is one of our Gen X icons. This is a guy we got to see grow up before our very eyes, and so we related to him. We saw Mark Waid do amazing things with the character, and then Geoff Johns do amazing things with the character. And it feels like they are specifically picking on guys like us. And I know that feels very comic book guy. He's almost like a sacred icon, or at least a character that, you know, it feels like they're just kind of ripping our heart out and saying that we don't matter. We're going to move on to a earlier generation, or, you know, let's market this to newer people, ironically, by featuring Barry Allen. But, you know, that's a totally different argument, different story. Because Geoff helped bring Barry Allen back. So it's kind of complicated in that way.
Yeah, Geoff clearly has love for the Silver Age, because he brought Hal Jordan back. He brought Barry Allen back, and then he brought threw love to one of his first big gigs by bringing Wally West back. So there's a lot happening still, and I think that it could have been so much worse, because they could have just killed Wally off again,
right? Or turned him into a villain, which would have been really weird.
Yeah, yeah, or like, villain. Yeah, done. like turned him into something like that. But now
the new Reverse Flash,
they've set Wally up for what I think is a big redemption arc that's going to reveal probably an actual villain at the heart of all this, and make Wally into the big like hero that everybody remembers him as. And hopefully at the end of it, I think at the end of that particular story that is being set up here, all the pieces of Wally that have been missing will finally be restored. Okay.
So, and that will kind of redeem this series too, as not a means to an end or kind of a symptom, but part of a larger tale that needed to be told to bring the character to where he was ultimately going to get. I think that kind of closes the book on Heroes in Crisis. What do you think?
I was having a lot of trouble with it, but you know what? Us talking this out like brings me to a better place.
Well,
and makes me feel a lot better about DC Comics in general.
Well, you want to talk meta, right? Post-crisis management. Well, we're definitely, you know, struggling with crises, but we're ironically doing that talking about a book that's about heroes struggling with crises. So it's a riddle trapped inside an enigma and all that what have you. But, yeah, I appreciate that if this is just a step to get Wally, because one of my favorite characters of all time is Wally West the Flash, to get him to a better place in the DC universe, to a better place, so be it.
Yeah, that's what we got to hope for, and that's the thing about DC. Not everything is going to be for everyone, but I think that everyone can find their everything within DC. It's just a matter of finding that thing that's, you know, that is for you.
Yeah.
That one, it could be a character, it could be a story, it could be a single issue. Hell, it could be a TV show or a movie.
Wow.
It can be literally anything under, you know.
It could be an app.
It can be this vast. There is a vast multiverse out there of fun stuff to explore, or as we've learned recently, a metaverse.
Yeah, it could be a late 70s variety show. It could be a late mid 60s spoof on a character that turns into being one of the most influential shows of all time. There's really something at DC for everyone. DC for me and DC for you.
And, you know, that's really the big takeaway from this series. This is what I hope everybody takes away, is that regardless of what kind of crisis you may go through, DC in some way will always be there for you. And, you know, it's been that thing that breaks our hearts but puts it back together again and brings us the next big, great, epic story. Because to pull from another like completely unrelated story in a vastly different universe, no one's ever really gone. And
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And another thing that that Tom King himself has said, there is nothing in this world that can be done to any of these characters that will ever break them. And what he means is something that when he mentioned HTF, Greg actually said this, that he feels cynical because their stories don't have an ending. Their stories just keep going.
Well,
and it feels like, he says, it feels like none of it matters. I respectfully disagree. All of it matters. Every last bit of it matters. Because these stories in some way have touched somebody. They've touched me. They've touched Greg. They've touched Nick, you, Tim, anyone who's ever read a DC story and loved it. It mattered. The story mattered. That's That's what makes these stories matter. Not their effects on continuity. Who gives a shit? Continuity is going to be in this constant state of flux, and it's this thing that we attach so too much of our faith and identity to, rather than looking at the stories as they are and taking them for what they make us feel. And there are always going to be those stories that really grip you, that pull you in, don't let you go. And then there are going to be stories that don't. There are going to be stories that are just not necessarily for you. But the great thing is, as these things never end, that means there's always a chance for a story to come along to pull you right back into it.
Yeah. And the legacy of these characters endures. You can go back and read the Who's Who series of the mid-80s and read about the characters as they were then, the continuity as it was then. And it's still great. It's just of its time. It was a reflection of the company at that time. We don't know what's in the future, but there's so much history at this point, 81 years of DC Comics history to go back, look at, sometimes positively, sometimes mockingly, but
yeah.
But you know, it's all entertainment, it's all escapism, it's all finding yourself in the characters and relating to it, and going back to you as a kid, and what did you like about the Super Friends, Todd? What did you like about your Mego Superman character figures? All that. It's all part of the bigger whole, the DC universe. And not to disparage the Marvel universe, that's a different thing. We have a whole show about that on the network. But what we don't have is a show just about the rich legacy of DC Comics.
You know, that is a strong point, Todd. Mm. And I'm glad you bring that up, because through this whole journey, like, you and I have had some great DC Comics conversations. We're both well versed in the history of it. It's kind of our lifeblood in a lot of ways. Like, we spend a lot of time talking, you know, Marvel out here, but we need a space to just talk DC Comics.
And with the advent of the DC Comics app, DC Universe, which is available for subscription, we're being exposed to a lot of comics we've never seen before, a lot of DC movies, series, specials we've never seen before. So it's a good opportunity to dig into that app specifically and kind of unearth some relics, talk about favorites, look at different themes of months and characters. And I think the time is nigh to dig into DC.
I am on board. I'm fully agreeing with you. Let's do that. Kick off a DC dedicated show. I think we can make it a big thing. We can do it for like a weekly show, say six months at a time.
Okay. And seasons, maybe we call them that.
Yeah. We can do this as a seasonal show and like really dig in deep on DC Comics, like what we like about it, what we think is silly, like just really have fun, like show people that DC has something for everyone. Like DC can be for, DC is for you. There it is, DC for you.
Very good. Huh.
I got it.
Will it just be you and me every week talking about these things, or are we going to open this up to some guests?
You know, I think we're going to mostly it'll be like us talking about this show, like, and we don't want to, you know, pull certain, like, we don't want to steal the thunder of certain other podcasts and go on for like 3 hours. So I think we'll keep it a little more compressed. But I think we can, like, once a month or so, we can bring in a few special guests, because there are other big DC nerds out there besides us, some who have gone on this journey with me. We can call up some of those folks. We can call up a few others who maybe haven't had a chance to talk on these airwaves yet, and we can go all in on DC Comics.
Okay, so RIP DC Post Crisis Management. Long live DC for you.
We We will be right back with it. I think we can kick this thing off. What do you think? In a week?
Yeah, let's check it out next week. I got nothing going on. Let's do a show.
Yeah, let's. I got the perfect idea for one.
Ambush perfect bug. Captain Carrot.
Both characters that deserve a lot more love than they get.
It's true. Kite Man.
Captain Carrot. Hell yeah.
Clay Man.
Clay Man is like the greatest new superhero at DC Comics. He is very pretty. But no. There's one that we absolutely have to kick off with. This year is the 80th anniversary of Batman. He is the biggest superhero in maybe in the world, certainly in DC Comics. And it's also been 30 years since Tim Burton's Batman hit theaters. 30 years, I believe, next month. So it will be like on a good timing, you know, if we can kick this show off next week, first week of June.
Okay. Well, let's send the bat signal up and just tell me when I need to show up and let's do a show.
Yeah, let's do that. And I'm going to aim that bat signal right on over towards in that Columbus, Georgia direction. And see who responds. But yeah, that will be next week. We're gonna kick this thing off big. And you know what, Todd? I gotta say a big thank you to you for closing this journey out with me.
I am the Alpha and the Omega, the Crisis on Infinite Earths, Heroes in Crisis, or is it Heroes in Crisis on Infinite Earths?
That's there it is.
Thing. Yeah,
that's the one. Like we've reached the end of this long journey. I've made my way back home and along the way picked up a new podcast partner, and we are about to be the new dynamic duo of PTB and Comics. We are going to make this DC for you pod hopefully is the biggest thing. Hopefully it's going to draw people into DC Comics and help them find something that they'll truly love.
Well, it's exciting to have yet another cool show on Place to Be Nation Comics Network, part of Place to Be Nation Pop, along with our weekly stalwarts, the Hard Traveling Fanboys, and some of our other shows like Marvel Age, Marvel Age Masterclass, and Conversation Comics. Look at that. We've got a full lineup now.
We really do. So many good comic shows, and you know, it's about time that we had one that was all dedicated to DC. So I'm very, very excited about doing this. But I guess we should throw some love to some of the other shows that are out there too before we head off, because there's been a lot of stuff happening lately. So
yes, and if I had the weekly. You can get started and I'll find it.
Yeah. I'm gonna throw some love out first, because the old PTBN Pop feed has had, after a 2-year hiatus, the Dadcast is finally back. I have to tell you, I've missed this show. JT and Don talk about a variety of annoyances, including potty training, lying, Nickelodeon shows, and more. God. Great show. I can't wait to delve back into this one.
A hell of a theme song, if I may say so myself.
You deserve all sorts of applause for that one. That theme song is killer. Everything about that show is great. I wish they would be more consistent with it. And, of course, I have another show, also another seasonal show here on the Pop Network that just wrapped up its season one finale, as my cohort Sam and I
took a look. That Sam is a good guy.
Sam Neely is a great man, and our season one finale of 90 to Nothing took a look at that 1999 classic, use that word loosely, Star Wars Episode One: The Phantom Menace.
That's a neat trick. On Year in Pop, Andy Atherton and Scott Criscolo are joined by J. Arsenio D'Amato and Dr. G. George Ribolina to discuss the news, music, and movies of 1975. I was 3 years old and you were like -6, right? In 1975?
That's about right.
Yeah. I remember some of that. I've got to listen to it. 1975, Jaws was the big deal. So I'm excited to listen to that show because I'm a big fan of Jaws. Show me the way to go home. Anybody love Jaws? Boom. Yeah.
I love that freaking movie.
Here's to swimming with bow-legged women. Yeah, it's just a phenomenal movie. Kind of the start of all the summer blockbusters and the shark, mechanical shark craze or the plastic toy shark craze of the 70s. Great stuff.
And it gave rise to one of my all-time favorite movie genres, the trash shark movie.
Yep, which continues to this day.
Yes, it does.
Also, on Place to Be Nation Pop, we had Pop Goes to the Movies. Andy Atherton did a solo review of Aladdin, the live-action remake starring Will Smith. You ain't never had a friend like Andy Atherton, Russell.
I really haven't. Too bad he didn't put me on his Ghostbusters pod.
Well, I think that's Tim's fault. Tim volunteered.
I blame them both.
You get Ghostbusters too, though.
Yes, I do.
You're going to have to take control out on your own.
Don't make me start singing Bobby Brown right now. But yeah, the Hard Traveling Fanboys are back, as they always are every single week. And they are continuing Avengers Month with an installment of the Long Book Hunters. They took a look at New Avengers Volume 1 Breakout from Brian Michael Bendis and David Finch, which is one of my all-time favorite Avengers stories.
Pretty classic run, I got to say.
Yeah, it is. I need to fully revisit it because I remember loving that first arc and then being like, what the hell is this in the second?
But, can you believe we're like 13 years out from when those started?
That is nuts, man. It has been it's been that long. And this was all like Road to Civil War stuff too. God, Civil War was a long ass time ago. They also just recently dropped the finale of Hard Travelers for Hire, which you and I both took part in.
I have been told that I was on that podcast, but I can neither confirm nor deny my participation, and nor can I be responsible for anything that I said on that show. Yeah.
There were many special appearances from Drunkle Todd.
No, the Speed Force. It was the Speed Force. I couldn't handle it, and so many, many insults were thrown about. But again, just opinions, not personal attacks.
I think there were only 11 insults thrown. But
my man.
The NBA team, they're back. They dropped a double shot of episodes, actually, including Gone Fishing Part 1 and the NBA Finals Preview Pod Blast. And, of course, rounding it out, This Week in Sports also found the Cowboy and D'Amato running down the NBA Finals and breaking down the series between the Warriors and the Raptors. And I guess everybody should be sure to keep an eye on our social media feeds, as the reboot of the Greatest Song of the 80s tournament is going to be starting soon.
Yeah, and though Place to Be Nation Pop is the home of comics, pop culture, movies, sports, nostalgia, we also have a wrestling feed, Place to Be Nation. Over on it this week, we've got the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Justin Scott, and guest Jambalaya Jake Williams dive into the May 1989 Meadowlands House Show, episode 521 of the Mothership. Jambalaya Jacob Williams, great dude. We got to meet him in Nolens.
Yes. I don't think I was there for that. You guys were there for that.
Sorry. Nick and I and Jennifer got to meet him in New Orleans. I'm sorry. You've been going to New Orleans lately, though, Russell Sellers. So
I have.
Forgive me if I get that. Then they're right back. They had a two-show week. When does that happen? They did Saturday Night's Main Event in May and July of 1989, the year I graduated from high school, with guest greetings from Allentown's own Peter Winston.
Wow, that is, man, that's a hell of a show. Like, Saturday Night Main Event was a
so
big
good.
Thing.
Yeah.
That was a big thing for me in my childhood, man. WCW days were like my favorite thing.
Well, they're talking WCW,
they're talking WWF.
Yeah, like the one that was on instead of Saturday Night Live, that one.
Yeah. But, yeah, that one. But I was thinking like
605 on the TBS. Yeah,
605 on the Superstation, yeah, TBS. Saturday Night Wrestling was WCW in my house. We didn't really have access to anything WWF at all. I grew up largely without it, but this was, you know, coming off the old territory days, so like WCW is what NWA became.
Good stuff. So you got Four Horsemen, Midnight Express, stuff like that.
Yes,
Steiner Brothers, Sting.
Steiner Brothers were big. Harlem Heat, of course. All of that was real big. Oh yeah, Sister Sherry and the Colonel.
Colonel Robert, there are some stories about him. and his family.
There may be a hog mentioned or two. But that's not all that the Wrestling Feed has. In the sixth episode of Row One, Seat One, Ben Zaney welcomes
I believe it's May KB, according to Glenn. I thought it was Maccabee, but it's May KB, I believe.
Daniel May KB to talk music and his independent wrestling career. So that's a pretty cool thing. And rounding it out, Scott Criscolo, Nate Milton, and Steve Willey recap Double or Nothing and Classic TNA on the newest edition of Main Event. I got to tell you, man, I really wanted to watch Double or Nothing, but I was in Chicago at the time and was unable to stream and have been unable to find a stream of it.
You will somehow find a way. If we have to set up a GoFundMe so you can pay for the replay, maybe we'll do that. But I got to tell you, I watched it live. It was a last-second impulse purchase, and my son and I really enjoyed the first AEW offering, Double or Nothing from Las Vegas. And that was a 5-star match, I got to say.
Dustin and Cody.
That was a fantastic match. The rest of the card, pretty good too. But my goodness, I will never forget that actual match.
Dude, I am so pumped for everything AEW. I will be watching that weekly show. I do actually have a way to watch that. So
okay.
I will not miss an episode of it. And, of course, on PlaceToBeNation.com, check out Steve Riddle's countdown of the top 25 matches in TakeOver history. Also available on the site is the latest installment of PTBN's excellent WWE Network adventure with an in-depth look at Mid-South Wrestling from May 26, 1984. Wow, I was 2.
Well, I was 12, but it doesn't matter. So that does it for this week's look at the end of DC Post-Crisis Management, hosted by Russell Sellers. Russell got to go all over the country and talk to so many cool people about these various crises. What's your favorite memory from this?
Oh, God. I think that there's just so many to name. This show's gotten, you know, all sorts of weird and funny and stressful throughout this whole process. But I should say, like, a big thanks to all the guests who've been on the show. Of course, to you, Todd, for joining me. Greg Phillips, who joined me on the Zero Hour podcast, where I invaded their studios up in British Columbia, Canada, and Vancouver. The Ho Ho Loon Plaza has now had a massive upgrade in security because of me. That was fun. Who else was unfortunate enough to join me on this?
You went to Ben Vegas, Moore. You went to New Jersey, you went to New York City, you went to Florida.
Ben Morse joined me for a look at Infinite Crisis and gave me some pretty cool Jeff Jones stories along the way for that one.
Hey, did you know that Miss Martian is named after Ben Morse's wife?
I did not know that. Did I? Yes, I did. I think that's been – that may have been mentioned a time or two. She was not real keen on letting me in their house. So that was a little bit of an awkward moment between me and her. I hope she's over that by now. But then, of course, wound up like really changing the world and like erasing myself from history there for a minute, which was, a little awkward. But one Jennifer Smith helped to bring it back and to help set the world right as we took a look at Flashpoint. And then we had the big – well, before that, Nick Duke actually joined me to take a look at Final Crisis in Black as Night. My head has actually healed most of the way from the hard shot that he gave me before tying me to a chair and refusing to talk about Grant Morrison anymore.
90% Black as Night, 10% Final Crisis.
And, you know, he was right to shift the subject that way.
Yes, he was.
He was right to do that, but I think he could have done that without like clocking me one over the head. But I did appreciate the sour beer and the pictures of big booty white women. That was nice of him. He let me keep those, by the way.
Excellent. And, better hide them before you get married, though.
Yeah, they're all safely tucked away on a hard Excellent. Drive somewhere.
We all have our stashes.
We do, and yeah, of course, Stephen Ferrari joined me for the episode before this one, where we took a look at the Dark Side War and the DC Universe Rebirth number one, which was a really great episode. Love. Pretty much all of this was great. Like, every episode was great. Every guest I had was awesome. And I hope that every one of them will appear at some point in the future on our new show, DC4U, that's going to launch next week. So this has been a hell of a project, and one that I wasn't sure how it was all going to wind up or how much I was going to like really enjoy doing it as it went along. But it was a passion project, and it's one that I'm happy to have done.
Yeah, well, congratulations on covering about 35 years of DC history and the various crises and kind of expanding everybody's horizons with these stories and really revisiting the good ones and skimming over the forgettable ones, but also just, you know, growing the list of people that we talk to and bring into our shows helped a lot, too, I think. It was interesting, it was refreshing to get some new voices on these projects, so... you know, you, me, Tim, Greg, Nick, we're on a lot of these shows. So it is nice to get guys like Mitch and Steven involved as well. And Jennifer, too, who all too rarely comes over to the comic side these days.
Yeah, I feel like she and Ben need a little bit more exposure in the comic side of things. Always happy to hear their thoughts, because I think they both bring a unique perspective on things, because their histories in comics are both very different. Huh. Wonder how they do on a show together.
Yeah. I think we're going to wonder about that for a long time. So
that's possible.
DC for you coming next week here on PTBN Pop.
All right, guys. Thank you all for joining me. I really appreciate everyone who listened to this show, who tweeted me about it, who had comments on any of these stories. And I really hope you guys are going to join us for DC for you. This is a project that we're both very passionate about. So come back next week as we kick off with an hour-long special episode looking at the 80th anniversary of Batman and celebrating the 30th anniversary of the 1989 Tim Burton-directed Batman film that pretty much changed the landscape of comic book movies and comic books and other media. So with that, thank you again for joining us. We'll see you on DC for you.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.